the key to operational profitability, or the first step, is to understand there's a lot of race to the bottom in pricing. There's not a huge amount of control over the top level of sales pricing, and the ability to distinguish your brand from all the other brands on the shelves. It really comes down to, you know, controlling costs is really the key in the environment we're in.
Welcome to How to Flourish in Cannabis. I'm your host, Brian Weber. The topic today, 5 steps to cannabis operational profitability. How to Flourish in Cannabis is an educational focused show with experienced leaders in regulated cannabis. Our guests have a wide range of industry experience in law, insurance, real estate, and today, cannabis accountant. No pitches here. This is designed to be a masterclass in regulated cannabis. How to Flourish in Cannabis is our effort to educate and elevate. Tracy, thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you. Thank you to you and the Flourish team for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about a topic that I'm very passionate about within the cannabis industry and, you know, and hopefully share some takeaways for the viewers.
Now, Tracy, I've known you for over a year, had the pleasure of knowing you for over a year, but just for our guests, give a little bit of background and like where you come to, you know, how you came to the cannabis space and the CPA, your experience here and some of the stuff that you've been doing for some of the cannabis clients you've been working with.
Yeah, awesome. So I ended up here through sort of a traditional CPA path in public accounting. I started on the audit side and was working with a regional firm for a long time that was one of the first in Massachusetts in particular, my home market here, to get into supporting cannabis operators back in 2013, 2014, 2015 in the Massachusetts medical market. I was leading the audit division for that firm, basically doing financial statement audit for many of the first large operators here in Massachusetts, and some of those went on to exits in 2018, 2019. And then in 2021, I realized there's a huge need for consulting with the operators. A lot of them were not really in a position to get audited at the time and really needed to get their house in order, and couple that with the pandemic. So I left to start independently consulting with cannabis operators. And in 2023, formed TAC CPAs with Charlie Cathro. We're a full service boutique cannabis-focused CPA firm serving operators of all different sizes across the country. I'd say most of our clients are based in the Northeast. I lead the advisory division for our firm, so I'm providing consulting CFO services, helping operators budget, forecast, and a lot of my work is around inventory costing. So I'm helping operators develop costing methodologies, implement them, and continue to monitor and update them. So really happy to be here today and dive in.
That's excellent work. Yeah, I know this industry needs some help in helping operators, you know, guide through the maze. It's already a very complex industry as it is with so many regulations and, you know, it's very large cost structures for these things, and helping operators make very smart decisions and make informed decisions based upon macro conditions all the way through the actual individual product. We're going to go over all those things today. So, you know, 5 steps to cannabis operational profitability. Some sage advice from a very experienced professional here. So we got 5 topics today. The first one is, you know, anybody who's operated in cannabis for any amount of time knows that every state is a country and there are national macro issues to this, as we heard recently with the move to Schedule 3, but every state, because there's no interstate commerce in cannabis here yet. And so every state has its own macro issues. That was one of your biggest ones on there. Let's kind of uncover that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. And the only other thing I want to add too is that this topic is relevant and we're working with clients of all sizes. So startup to MSO. So I think, you know, there's no operators immune to this. And I think, you know, it's a topic that is what I consider to be fundamental. And many of the operators that have made it to multi-state operator level still are working through this costing. And we shouldn't assume that in the cannabis space that this as what we would consider an accounting and operations to be pretty fundamental in any other industry sort of hasn't been. And we'll talk about that now. So the macro level, I think step one is really just understand the market that you're in, whether it's a new market where the pricing is starting at a premium because there's a shortage of supply and it's just developing, or if you're in a more mature market like where we are in Massachusetts is definitely maturing and becoming more competitive. We've seen that in Michigan, and certainly what has happened with pricing out in Oregon and Colorado and California sort of moving west to east. Just understand the market you're in, right? The key to operational profitability, or the first step, is to understand there's a lot of race to the bottom in pricing. And so our operators are not controlling there's not a huge amount of control over the top level of sales pricing and the ability to distinguish your brand from all the other brands on the shelves. And so it really comes down to controlling costs is really the key in the environment we're in.
And operators can go on to other market analytics pricing programs that you could see what the market price is for out there. So you're going to have mid-range flower, you're going to see what this is, top tier, more value flower, or whatever product category you want. You're going to see what the market rate for those sales are. And that is kind of what your top line price point is. That is your price to be competitive, within that range. So if you have a mid-tier flower, you're growing it at a certain price per gram or selling it at a certain price per gram. That's it. The market sets the price, and you have to work your numbers in to be able to make a profit at that price.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's it, right? No. So the operational profitability is you got to control the costs and know what your costs are because of this race to the bottom pricing on the top end. And I think, really we've seen a lot over the years of models built out with the operators going to new markets, and they're modeling, they're building out these really shiny, sophisticated facilities based on modeling pricing in the new market, and they're not modeling out, 2-3 years, even not even 5 years, of what is that pricing going to be and what does my cost structure need to be at that time. So, knowing the costs and modeling out your costs and your way you're going to operate, your model for operating, the sooner the better.
The actual item here, understand where you live. Understand that where you live might not be the best place to run a cannabis company, especially if you live in California or Oregon or any state out west. And, look, there are information sources available. Headset's one. There's a few other ones that are available that have Alpine IQ is another one that have, sale pricings for different categories, for different items. You can find that information readily available. And get that information, inform yourself to start with that is at current what the top line is, but look at those trends for pricing just to see where that stuff's going, because it's going to bottom out and it's going to eventually normalize once this becomes more of a competitive environment place. So that said, we have two kinds of costs. Tracy, what are those?
All right. So yeah, the two buckets are how we use in the accounting world is direct and indirect. So typically, when we start working with operators on, diving into their cost structure, the operators usually have a pretty good handle on their direct costs. So these are things like direct labor in the case of a grow, the amount of cultivators that are working in the plants, overseeing the plants, and what their salary is and or their hourly rate, the nutrients they're using, the cocoa pots or things like that in the case of a grow, on the manufacturing side, they usually have a good sense of what their packaging and their ingredient costs are. Again, those are direct costs. So what usually is a gap area, and I think one aspect of this in general that I want to highlight is we'll talk about what indirect costs are, but it's so important in this process to really connect and communicate between accounting and operations. So throughout, this whole sort of process we're running through, it's really important to have that point of communication because the operations team has a lot of really good, really valuable information and has some of these costs honed in their own way. But it's usually outside of whatever accounting system is being used. A lot of cases, even some of the larger MSOs are still operating on QuickBooks Online. They're not operating in really sophisticated full ERP systems as we think of them in other traditional manufacturing industries. And then accounting has some of this, valuable information like the indirect costs. So indirect costs, as an example, would be things like rent, insurance, the costs of management and the people who are overseeing production. So production managers or the chief operating officer, they are spending time on production related activities and they're salary is an indirect cost of producing the product, right? So when we think of facility costs and what is also referred to as overhead, operating in cannabis, particularly in an indoor grow facility, is very expensive. There's a high amount of these fixed costs that the people overseeing cultivation and production have no control over, right? They're only responsible how many people are growing, what are their yields, what are they doing for nutrients and packaging. They really don't have any say in what you're paying for insurance or rent or utilities. I mean, utilities is one of the biggest costs, which it was considered indirect, but in a lot of ways it's direct, right? In an indoor grow, most of that energy is going into the cost of cannabis and the cost to grow the plant. So identifying what's our direct, what's our indirect, and really creating that link of communication between accounting and operations so we can start to outline these different cost categories and get our arms around all of these costs.
But that's the big actionable item there is talk.
Yeah, talk. I mean, it sounds silly. But I can't even tell you, Brian, you know, how many clients we start with, and you know, it's accounting getting out of their office and walking down the hall or going into the facility and saying, what's going on here? And sitting down and creating that link. There's again, both groups have a lot of valuable information. And sometimes it's just they need the lead through the process to just walk through, like, step by step, what are we going to do and how are we going to communicate together? Because it's so critical. And it really overlaps both areas.
Both those things combined come together to have a fully laden cost for a product. So the real big action item for that one, just to make sure I highlight that one, is talk. Have your finance people and your accounting people go to lunch at least once a week, maybe twice a month. I don't know. But talk about these things and have a meeting about these things, because you have to know what your fully laden costs are for all the products and if it makes sense. So, well, how do we get into that? What are some of the costing methodologies that, you know, if I was a grower, what are some of these costing methodologies to help me better understand this, or a manufacturer or somebody else?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of different options for operators to choose in terms of costing. So there's different methodologies and approaches, and they've evolved over time. Even if I were to look back at some of the costing we did in 2015 and 2016 to now, just, you know, as the market's matured and we've gotten more information, the costing approaches have become more exact or better informed. So there's, you know, some people will take a broader approach where they'll take 3 months of cost, for example, in a grow, they'll take 3 months and divide by their yields and say, well, my average grow cycle is about 3 months. So I'm going to take 3 months of cost and divide by my pounds or my grams, which, again, from an accounting perspective, there's a lot of judgment and estimation that is allowed in these methodologies. And it's important to be consistent. But that's not really going to get you the most exact analysis or outcome of your cost per gram or your cost per pound. Because again, it may not capture all these indirect costs into that department. You may not be allocating everything into the cost that you're using as your cost pool, so to speak. And so you get a cost per gram or cost per pound as a result, but it's probably not the most accurate to be making decisions from.
Gotcha. Okay. So you might start there as an operator in some cases. If you're a grower or manufacturer right there, you might start at that kind of level and it's better than nothing. But what are some more of the advanced costing methodologies that you might, you know, or want, maybe another advanced one that you might want to talk about?
Yeah. So I think where I want to spend sort of the most of our time here is around, or the result of the costing methodology we would suggest is really the individual product costing. So really the best methodology that's going to give you the best information or result is an individual product cost or a cost at the SKU level. You're really going to be able to distinguish not just flower, but you know, is it a package base? Is it a pre-roll? I actually, Brian, it's funny. I think the strain level is even further than that. And I think to track at that level, you really need to do the peak step would be to get a software and have strain level batch tracking all the way through. And I know Fleur is, you know, there's other softwares that do that. So that is sort of the ideal
pinnacle state. Yes.
Pinnacle. Yes. Thank you. But before that is just right at the SKU level. So not necessarily distinguishing between the strains, although there is a difference, and that would be the ideal. getting to the SKU level is sort of the best right now with the way people are doing this manually in Excel and Google Sheets. And, you know, primarily is that if we can at least get to that level, that's going to give us right now sort of the best level of information as opposed to that broader bucket sort of peanut butter spread approach I was just talking about. My favorite term.
Yeah. So for that general costing method, you're just slathering this all over all your products, if you will, these general operational costs, but like for particular on the SKU. So maybe let's just, I love for examples here. Let's take, I don't have an extra one here, but I do have a single pre-roll here sitting on my well-labeled, unopened, ready, you know, just ready for the weekend. And like, let's just take an example of a single pre-roll or a five pre-roll pack. And let's kind of go through that as an example in talking about individual product costing, you know, when we're looking at something like this. And obviously this can apply to gummies and vapes and all other product assortments you could think of. So maybe let's take us where they at. Let's see what that, for instance, looks like.
Sure. Yeah. So when we're thinking about the best methodology would be this individual product SKU level costing approach. What that means or the key aspects of that sort of actionable items are do your time trials. I know you joked about the clipboard. Maybe you don't need a clipboard, but you need some sort of paper or lab notebook or something. Have the groups that are making the production team that's making the pre-rolls or trimming pounds of flour every day. Keep a log. A lot of times there is a log, so, you know, some do, some don't, or they have pieces of this information in some form. So maybe they're tracking the pounds that they're trimming every week or every day. But maybe they're not tracking how many pre-rolls they're making. So you really, the first step to get usable information is to do some time trials. It could be a day, it could be a week, 2 weeks, you know, ideally you'd have these running production logs. And again, there's opportunity to move this into software once you get a process built out to then automate it and keep it real time as opposed to notebooks. But again, this is where we're starting. So track how many pre-rolls you're making, how many multi-packs you're making, how many people is it, and then the accounting team will apply those labor rates. But capturing that critical time trial information is really a key here, because you know what we've seen just from the story perspective is some, you know, MSO groups going through this exercise and really realizing, oh my goodness, it is costing us so much labor to make these multi-packs of pre-rolls. For one reason or another, they have an extra sticker. They have to do something manually to get the multi-pack bound with compliantly. And when they dig through this information and we add that with the other cost of the product, they realize, oh my gosh, is it really worth it? Should we continue to make these multi-packs? Because there's just a lot more manual labor in it. Pre-rolls, I think we've seen a lot of people realize how time-intensive pre-roll making is. And there are groups that I think have recognized, again, particularly in Massachusetts, there's an opportunity for contract manufacturing here. So if you can, if, you know, if groups can make pre-rolls or they have a machine that can make them a lot faster, there's a need for that. If operators have really dug in to understand, geez, we're spending a lot of time on pre-roll labor, we can outsource that and have our team do something else that's more of a core competency. So definitely the time trials is huge.
I know that gets into like our next topic a little bit more related to like, you know, understanding those costs that are there, but like on a quick for instance basis. So like you got your flour, right? You know what your cost is for that. You've grown the flour, you know what it is. It's going to be, you know, that flour that you're going to be using for those pre-rolls. And just so I understand this correctly, where the differentiator is between a single pre-roll and a multi-pre-roll pack is like there's different packaging for those. There's different time constraints for those. And you know, if you're selling that multi-pack at a discount to a single one, your revenue on that is still going to have some costs on those related to that. So you might marginally make less money on the multi-pack than the single one. And because you're, you know, like, you, why would you buy three if you're not saving any money, right?
Right. Yeah, no.
I guess it's just for convenience, you know, whatever else. But so that's kind of where the sunk cost of the product might be the same for both those SKUs as you're getting to the flour, but for the packaging, different times, different packaging costs, you know, like all those things are there. And that's where it diverges.
The multi-pack might go into a tin, right? Because you're taking the three and then there's another piece of packaging plus labor. And so you really have to outline each of the inputs specifically for those separate products specifically, instead of spreading, oh, it's all a flower category or it's all pre-roll, getting into that level of specificity will really just get you more accurate information. So the time trials and the production logs are huge. The other area that's really, really important actual item when we're thinking about costing at the SKU level is diving into the lab and understanding what are our yields at the product level. This has been a very, very eye-opening tracking not only tracking, but creating the link between operations and the lab team and accounting. Because the lab team has all these yields. They usually are tracking this in a notebook, but again, they're not tagging dollars to it. So they're tracking the yields, you know, 3 to 5% on a hash on average benchmark, but how many grams of fresh frozen or dry flour did you have to put in to get that? And how much did you pay for those grams of fresh frozen or dry flour? Or if you're growing it yourself, what was the cost per gram or pound that we calculated as the input? So that's where you have to pair with accounting to figure out. And again, this has been very eye-opening. 3 to 5% is really low. And if you don't have the right strains going in, or it's costing you too much to grow those strains and they're not yielding a good 3 to 5% on the hash wash, it is hugely different in terms of the resulting cost when we pair those dollars with the yields from the lab. So again, and that's different lab products. So hash, rosin, batters, waxes, whatever they're making, the yields can vary significantly. And if the team isn't really, you know, efficient, or they're not using the right input by strain for that product output, the dollars can be significant. And again, that's been very, very eye-opening when we're thinking about the data that we're working with in this individual product costing approach.
So just going through that exercise, like you're going to build SOPs around product tracking and you're building and like those items on there. Some more advanced payroll systems might have different codes that you can log in underneath different codes to be able to track. Oh, I'm doing production work today, or I'm doing like more operational house items today, or I'm working on a particular product line today. Those are probably higher level things when you're getting into more advanced systems and more advanced manufacturing processes. But like, even at a basic level, you can get SOPs set up around recording what that time works for the day. Because if you don't do it the day of, you're not going to remember or get any accurate information. Oh, how much did I spend 3 weeks ago on a Monday doing this thing? I don't know, 2 hours here, 3 hours there, 4 hours there. Nobody knows, you know? So having those SOPs that really help, and you're going to get better data out of it, even if it's not 100%.
Absolutely. It's all about, yeah, the key here is the better data, the more accurate information at that SKU level you'll have. And it absolutely does come back. There's a payroll component for sure, especially for the smaller operators where their teams are cross-functional and cross-trained. So they do have people harvesting one day and then packaging the next day. And so really figuring out what that output is huge, or how much time they're spending on harvesting versus packaging makes a big difference when we're getting to this level.
Now, we're going to take a little pause here before we get into the final item here. But, you know, as we're recording this, it was announced that the DEA did support the Schedule 3 determination, which would presumably remove 280E from an issue that we are exactly talking about today. Can you go into that a little bit? Because I want to make sure everybody is very well aware of how COGS are tracked, how they are allowable, how some might not be deductible, how some things might change.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting, and I've gotten this question a lot over the last few weeks since that was announced. But ultimately, this process that we're talking about is industry agnostic and really has no impact of 280E in a 280E world or a non-280E world. If we're making shoes, you still need to know how many people it takes you to make the shoes and how many shoes you make in your factory, what the indirect costs of the factory are. I mean, it really is fundamental from an accounting inventory cost accounting perspective. This process that we're outlining doesn't change. It really doesn't. Like, you're still running a business and you still need to know what your costs are. And you're required to, again, when we talked about the indirects earlier, you're required to capture all those costs and build it into the cost of your product in a bill of materials. I haven't used the word bill of materials or BOMs, which is how we affectionately refer to the SKU level costing, you have to put all the costs in there. And again, that's whether you're in a 280E world or a non-280 world. Any business you're running, you need to understand. It's, again, I laugh because it seems so, as an accountant, it seems basic and fundamental, but it just hasn't been. And the reason is, you know, a lot of the operators we work with came up through the medical markets and they were required to be vertically integrated. The market started such a high sales price. And there was really, the operators were not forced to really take this hard look at understanding their costs. It was all good. The green rush, cash is coming in, everything's great. And there just wasn't a need, or there wasn't a force, economic force, to make them look at, you know, manage these. I think the smartest operators have been understanding this and have been operating lean and have been really getting a handle on their costs very early on since day one. And those operators, I think, are set up fundamentally to really survive the long term as the market compresses. But anyway, yeah. So what we're talking about here, whether we're in a 280E world or not, doesn't matter. They will, you know, the operators in theory will have more cash from not having to pay taxes, which is wonderful. As an accountant that serves the industry, we're excited to see this happen. And, you know, consulting CFO, where we're constantly managing cash flow with our clients, it would be wonderful if this gets through. But from a costing perspective, you know, these concepts and this process continues on and is a fundamental, you know, regardless of descheduling.
Wanted an accountant to address that, not myself, but yes, I know we've had conversations about it for the past few weeks. So this brings us to our final point. And this is I'm going to call this the coming to Jesus moment. After you've gone through all these exercises and you could see what your fully laden costs are for your different products that you have, kind of going back to step one, here's our costs for this. Here is what the market is willing to pay for this. Is it worth doing? And if it is, what could we change to make it more efficient, potentially?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I call this sort of step five, this SKU rationalization process that you can go through. So once you've gone through these other steps and you've got your costs and your data split out and tracked and you've accumulated all of this, you can step back at the end of any sort of costing project. Is the goal is to have a list of all your SKUs that you're making and the cost of each and the sales price, the wholesale sales price of each, and a margin. And then go through the list and say, does it make sense for us to make these, continue to make these, now that we know what the costs are and what the margins are for each of these products? Is it something we're good at or not? Like if our hash yields are terrible, we should just stop making that because there's somebody else in the market that's making it more efficiently. They have maybe better strains that yield better on hash, or like the coming to Jesus is we don't need to be all things to all people. Again, a lot of this goes back to the many states starting with the mandate to be vertically integrated in the medical markets that then turned adult use, where the operators were forced to make everything themselves. And there's a lot of that carrying through of they had to do it initially, but now that the markets are maturing, really taking the step back and looking at the data and the information to say, I know we had to make these, but are we good at it? And should we continue to make them if it's not a core competency? And there's another operator that's making these products more cost effectively. They just have a better process and it's part of their course. Maybe somebody's focused on flower and other groups are really good at edibles or tinctures, or they've got a really craft hash product. Like, lean into that, lean into what you're good at, cut the SKUs that are low margin that it's okay if you don't do everything well, right? If we should focus on what we do well. And
you don't need to be everything to everybody.
Exactly.
Figure out what you're good at and go with it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the takeaway here. And you know, going through this process should enable operators to be able to make that step back, look at the data, and let the data help you determine, you know, why you're making these products and should you continue to make these products. Or you identify, all right, we do want to keep making this product, but we got to make some changes. We have to really focus on this piece, either the labor or the yields in the lab, or we need to switch out some packaging, right? Maybe if we switch out this packaging, because the customer maybe doesn't care if something's in a glass jar or a Mylar bag, And that could save a dollar per unit. Maybe if we switch the packaging, okay, then we can continue to make it. But you can make those informed decisions with the data in front of you, as opposed to off of, you know, just kind of a gut feel or emotional. Like, I really want us to have a multi-pack line. I really want us to have a hat. Okay, well, that's great. But if you're not good at it, just stop.
Just stop it. And the importance is that the life of the business is on the line with these things. So it's one of those things, if you don't do a good job here, you might not be around to do a job for anything. And we've seen that left and right in this industry, sadly. Tracy, I always love chats with you. Whenever I'm up at accounting conferences or up in Boston, I always come away from a conversation with you, not just learning something, but having like an actual framework on how to think about something, which I really love from a very fundamental level. And I hope our audience has that today. Two things before we go. One, whoever's listening today, you have some follow-up questions or another accounting topic. Tracy is an amazing CPA. We have a wealth of CPAs that we're friends here with at Flourish, and I'd love to have a few of them on. So any tax questions, any accounting questions, money is the lifeblood of your business. Put them in the comments. Give us a like and subscribe. And for people who have some follow-up questions that might want to implement something like this, how do they get in touch with you, Tracy?
We're always happy to take questions and have engaging conversations on any of these, you know, topics. The more brain power, the better. So my email is tracy@taccpas.com. And that's T-R-A-C-Y, Tracy. So tracy@tacpas.com. All right. And it's going to show up. Yeah. So yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or send an email, and yeah, I'll definitely get back with any questions and continue the conversation. But I really am so passionate about this. It's really so critical for cannabis operators, where the markets are and where they're going, that this fundamental is in place and people understand this so they can make good decisions for, you know, to hope to see these businesses operating long term is our goal.
Schedule 3 doesn't change anything, people. You still got to track costs. And the more accurate you can do it, the more profitable and the better decisions you'll be able to make. So, Tracy, thanks for coming on, sharing a 5-step words to wisdom in operational cannabis profitability. So, super appreciate it. Thank you for being on, Tracy.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian. And thanks to the Flourish team.